Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. Another sports week means more shocking results, more pain, more ecstasy for football, rugby, cricket, tennis, and athletics fans. As usual, you've come to the right place for the best off-the-field conversations about the games that we love, the games that consume us each and every weekend. And here at the Sports Live podcast, it isn't just about the games themselves. It's about the impact, the analysis, the talking points that have the country and sometimes the world talking. Last Friday, we did a special episode on the Eben Etzebeth saga, which was an amazing feat for the team that works on this podcast, the multimedia team at Tiso Blackstar. We had the leader of the Khoisan Defiance campaign, Sammy Clausen, on the line from the Western Cape. We had Peter de Villiers' agents, Pablo Urayai, in studio. Damn, I got that surname right. Pablo will be proud. And it was podcast magic. Clausen said on the podcast that they were calling for SA Rugby President Mark Alexander to resign following how their establishment has handled the Eben Etzebeth scandal. As we know, Etzebeth is being accused of violent and racial acts that were allegedly committed the weekend before the Springbok World Cup squad was named in August, during a fateful night out in Langebaan. If you haven't heard that special episode, please go to timeslive.co.za, click on the multimedia tab and select podcast. There you will find the Sports Live podcast ready for you to download and enjoy if you've not done so already. The Sunday Times also revealed last Sunday that Etzebeth was apparently part of a wolfpack gang that was notorious for violent acts in Langebaan. It's all happening, I'll tell you. And there was also the Makazole D-Rex Mapimpi issue regarding the bomb squad. And this is what I have to say about it. Guys, out there are trolls on social media ready to solicit reactions from the race-sensitive South African public. If we're not careful and we do not scrutinize everything we see online, we might find ourselves being manipulated into outrage by these trolls. The person that put up the first Mapimpi video, where the bench players are seen to be telling Mapimpi to go away and him shrugging them off back, didn't show the full video. In the full video, it clearly shows that it was Lotiyaga who was being told to go away, so to speak. And Mapimpi explained in a video on his Instagram account that this was a bomb squad scenario. The bench players would come on and call themselves the bomb squad. Obviously, Makazole Mapimpi, being a starter, has nothing to do with the bomb squad, but no one wanted to believe him because we want to believe the things that correlate with our biases. Moreover, Trevor Nyakane put up a bomb squad post on his own Instagram account on the 27th of July already, featuring him and the Beast, Mtawarira and Bongi Mbonambi in the image. This was 27th July. Yet people say that Mapimpi was lying when he mentioned the bomb squad and it was all made up and it was all a PR stunt for SA Rugby. Guys, we have to be more judicious when it comes to this stuff. I'm not saying who's right and who's wrong, but as the information has come out and people have put all their reactions out there, then you start to think, is it really what we saw, or were we being manipulated to see what we wanted to see? Obviously, we are a race-sensitive country, but that doesn't mean that every time there's an incident, every time people don't want to shake hands, we scream racism. Let's be a little bit wiser when it comes to internet and online reactions. What are we willing to believe? Are we willing to believe the fake outrage or an explanation from Mapimpi and the coach Rassie Erasmus himself? On a positive note, I've been very impressed by this man Cheslin Kolbe's performances during the Rugby World Cup, man. I can't speak enough about him, so much so that I think if the box go all the way, he might be in line to win the World Rugby Player of the Year award. Yeah, I said it, World Rugby Player of the Year award. I think Brian Habana won it in 2007, the year the Springboks won the Rugby World Cup, and he is en route to Brian Habana's stardom, man. And even Brian Habana tweeted that he wishes he could step as viciously as that man Cheslin Kolbe. In my book, he should move to 15. Really, I'm sorry, you have to miss out if push comes to shove, but I'm not sure if Rassie will make that decision to allow the space for someone like Sboon Gosi to come in, another dynamic runner, with of course Makazole Mapimpi holding up the left wing. I wrote in a piece for New Frame that Kolbe has changed the South African psyche with regards to the small guys. But the best person to describe Kobe's performances and impact is none other than former winger Brayton Poulter, who has more than 50 Springbok caps, by the way, who is probably the godfather of small Springbok players who didn't fit the big guy mold. This is Brady talking about Chesney Kobe.
Again, our man, the dynamite pocket rocket Chesney Kobe, man of the match again today. He just keep getting better and better. Just when we thought he, you know, he's reached his heights, he comes up with something new. And today, you know, a bit of a slow start from the box, but ultimately, you know, you can't keep a good man down, and Chesney got into the game very, very nicely. I think he certainly has changed the perception for people in regards to small guys. I mean, the guy's tackling stats is absolutely scary. Every game, providing he gets the ball, he makes more than 100 meters. So I'd like to see him even getting more involved. You know, people actually talking about him playing from fullback, which is, I think, a really good idea. Then he'll be even more involved in the game, if you know what I mean. So because now he needs to go and look for work all the time as well. But what a boy. I mean, you know, left South Africa because some people said he will never be a Springbok one day, too small. And now he's, you know, taking balls out of the air. He's using his electric and dynamite pace to his advantage. And people find him difficult to tackle. He steps people left, right and center. And his all-round game is of the highest quality. And he certainly has generated a lot of excitement from each and every South African who supports rugby and who loves rugby. And it is really, really good to see. So, you know, I think all of us are just really proud of him. And may he continue in that vein. And so far, you know, got a bit of a scare towards the end when he got a bit of a ankle twist. So let's hope it's not too serious. But I tell you what, that man has got magic written all over him at the moment. And may he continue to even get better. Hopefully the box will find a way to get him even more involved, because that's going to be the key going forward. So that in a nutshell, absolute pleasure and joy to watch Chesney, and some of his teammates can certainly take a leaf out of his book. So it's Boo, my man. I hope wherever you are, you're having fun and happy and healthy. And until next time.
Guns. An essential tool in self-protection or a catalyst for criminality. CliffCentral.com presents GunCast, a podcast that unpacks the divisive issue of gun ownership in South Africa. Join legal expert Martin Hood as he hosts a series of talks with both sides of the gun lobby. Whether you support the right to carry guns or you believe they're a destructive tool that society could do without, GunCast will enlighten and challenge you in equal measure. Find GunCast now on the Cliff Central app, on CliffCentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, my next special guest is a three-time SAB Television Sports Journalist of the Year Award winner and a former ENCA sports journalist, Mr. Junior Steinbank, also a friend of mine, a mate, a guy I love chatting to about content, about sports, about everything. A guy, I would say, he gets it, man. We're going to talk to him about what sports he's been following these days, what he's been up to since leaving the mainstream scene, and, you know, that nice little experience he got to go to the Olympics in Brazil, in Rio, in 2016. I've only been to one major tournament, that was Wimbledon in 2014. And I know I do complain about it, but it was Wimbledon. You know, I just went to Japan, but I wouldn't say I was working in Japan. I was there for a week. It was a nice little fun trip. But this guy was at the Rio Olympics, and it's the biggest sports tournament on the globe. And yeah, he will tell us about that, his career, what's going on in sports, and we'll chop it up and catch up with Mr. Junior Steinbank. Junior, welcome to the Sports Live podcast, buddy.
Thank you so much for having me, man. I wish you had led with, when introducing me, I wish you had led with my friend first. That comes first and foremost, right?
Yeah,
a good
yeah.
mate of mine, and then all that other stuff, right, comes afterwards.
Oh, man,
right?
I didn't know how to rank it properly.
No, what do you think I'm most proud of? I'm most proud to, you know, when I see people on the street, talking about Sibun Chigiliso and the work he's doing, I can say, yeah.
Ah, get out of here.
That guy introduces
bro.
Me as his mate. First.
Get out of here, bro. Get out of here. How you been, man?
As of late, I've been pretty good. Yeah. I'm doing okay.
How did you get into like sports journalism? Was it like a thing that you wanted to do off the bat, or did you fiddle with other forms of journalism at first?
No, man.
How did that sports journalism?
No,
because I've got a different story to that, which I'm not sure if I'm going to share it now. This is all about.
I'd love for you to please. We can exchange stories. Mine is one of those typical. I fell into a type of situation.
Okay.
I grew up not far from where we are right now. I went to high school. I was in boarding school at the National School of the Arts.
Okay.
Just a couple of blocks from where we are now. I spent high school in that boarding school around Bramfontein all the time, and I was a drama student. I always thought I would grow up to be a screenwriter, producer, director, and actor. That was always my jive, actually. Mm. But through doing that, I developed a skill for writing and a passion for reading. I went when I was 19 to the US, to continue my studies in the dramatic arts and theater and film. And when I got to the U.S., I lived in Queens, in New York, and when I got to the U.S., I didn't have anybody with me.
Where's your Tibor Tash accent?
I've got no idea. I don't have anybody who tells you that, oh, no, you just happened to come back with it is lying. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends with me. I didn't know anybody in New York City. And I started to find that the easiest way to connect with people, to start a conversation, was through sports. I'd meet an Australian guy and be like, hey, you watch the cricket. I'd meet an English guy and say, hey, you watch the rugby. Meet an American, you could speak about the Knicks or about the Giants. And I was, at that stage of my life, I'd say a passive sports fan.
Okay.
I liked a good game, but yeah. I wasn't a fanatic.
All right.
I wouldn't cancel plans for most matches.
Not like me.
When I was 19. When I was 19. But then you start forming these relationships with people based on that one thing, because that's the only thing that we can talk about. We come from different cultures, from different countries. We find it difficult to relate. But if I say to you, man, those Giants last night, then that's something that we can spark
hey,
off from.
Man. Who knows where that conversation will go.
Yeah, and from there, my passion for sport kind of evolved and evolved, and I became the fanatic that I was, let's say, in my 20s. I've calmed down a little bit now.
You
need some balance in life. In my 20s, I had none of that balance. When I got back to South Africa, I started a vlog with a bunch of mates.
Okay.
A vlog called Fool Time. F-O-O-L time.
Right. Okay.
Because we spent every weekend on my couch in my apartment, talking crap about sports, and we'd watch everything from we would spend from the last Friday evening Curry Cup game to the last Sunday evening La Liga game just on my, that's me and my mates drinking beer, watching games, and talking crap. And then one day my friend Bongani says, we should film all this crap we talk.
You think?
And we started doing that. It became a little bit expensive, but we put out a season of like really fun stuff on YouTube, and it got me my break into the industry. When we started running out of money and we could no longer do it, I packaged them into my CV, and I put a link to that content in my CV and
put it out there.
Started putting it out, and because that vlog had a lot of other elements to it, right? It had a Facebook page and stuff that I'd write on and whatnot. It was enough to get some attention. So that was my entry into sports journalism.
Pretty long-winded. But an entry nonetheless, man. Mine is like totally different. I've done some what feels like jail time doing politics in Durban during the rise of Zuma and the break between the IFP and the NFP.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
There. Man, look, I've lived, bro. It's a hole, bro. What else have I done? Man, I've worked in sales. I used to be a sales associate at Home. You know the homeware store?
Yes,
yeah, I used to sell like linen.
So I can tell you. I only learned that about you last week because I saw what Tando posted a picture
with
of
me
you.
Wearing an apron, right?
Exactly.
And at Home apron, and I've got an earring.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was me. I was that guy. I couldn't get a break in journalism. I could write. I could always write.
Sure.
Right. I could always write, but it's something I discovered too late. To sort of have cultivated it in high school.
Okay.
Right. So, but I could always do it, like English words, everything. I could just put them together.
Yeah.
Languages as well, because we spent some time in Lesotho when I was growing up.
Okay.
Played some cricket. I even played international cricket for Lesotho as well.
Okay.
At under 15.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not a lot
That's
of people
a little bit of
that.
A Zicks and Dust story. There's some correlations there, right?
A little bit, yeah.
There's some correlations. Zicks and Dust, an Eastern Cape guy who spent time in Lesotho.
Yeah. So, spent some time in Lesotho. And he's a writer as well, obviously.
Yeah.
The most phenomenal, probably, writing expert we've ever had. I'll put him up there with Bo, Bryce Courtney and JM Coetzee.
Yeah.
If he's not greater. So, yeah, I did a bit of that. And then eventually I applied to an internship when Tiso Blackstar used to be called Avusa.
Mm-hmm.
Got in and I was hungry as a mofo, bro. Because I had all those years where I wasn't in the industry and I was just... Yeah, I was doing this and that in East London, you know. I really thought I was going to live the East London life where I'll just get a job, get a Polo Vivo, and live in a flat, bro.
Right.
And drink every weekend. play touch rugby with the weekends and talk about how I used to be a cricketer.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting a break in your own career, man, so difficult. And I get a lot of young guys hitting me up. On Twitter, where I'm most present, and on LinkedIn, you know, looking for a break. And it's tough, you know, when you've either studied or you got a passion for it. And I feel fortunate and privileged to have done it and gone all the way up to editing Kickoff and being a published author. You know, still got lots more stuff that I'm going to do, but I still feel like it's been a privilege. I did the thing I've always wanted to write sports. Like,
sure.
I've fiddled around and messed around with everything else, but I've always wanted to be a sports writer, bro.
Yeah.
So, could you say the same thing? What's the one thing you said you've always wanted to be? Like,
smart.
You got that covered,
over and above everything.
You got that covered.
Went through phases of my life when I was like a real youngster. I thought I'd be a professional sports person. I realized I wasn't good enough at anything. I was C-team football, C-team tennis. I was just, you know, I was average, average. High school, like I said, you know, I thought I'd be in the dramatic arts. You know, again, you know, there's some dovetail there with your boy Thando Manana as well, right?
Yeah, he was.
There's a little bit.
He was quite the dramatic artist.
He did like the theater. He did like the theater. But through the one consistent thing, I'm not the most competitive person in the world. I don't care too much about being the best. I don't care too much about being the first. I just want to do things with integrity.
You're right.
I just want to do things with properly. You know, and that requires.
Yeah, I think we have that in common. That knack of just wanting to do things right.
Yeah.
And not a lot of people kind of have the kind of application required to, you know, narrow your focus.
It requires patience.
Yeah, it does require. I've actually burnt a lot of friendships and relationships in my pursuit to do content the right way, good content. And I don't always get it right, but I always feel like if you do certain things, you have to put like great content out there, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's sports, man. It's fun.
It is.
Right. We could be having a beer right now. It's a pity we're recording this on a Monday. But we could be having a beer right now and it would be as fun as it would have been if it was like a serious conversation.
A serious element to it as well.
Particularly
people want to bring that absolutely false perception of there's no politics and sports don't overlap, which is absolute nonsense.
Bollocks.
Twitter garbage. but you know, there's a serious from a society like our own South Africa, Saudi Arabia, where women are literally dying to get into football stadiums. Mm. Places like Palestine, where Israeli football clubs are playing football on occupied territory, that you can't ignore the seriousness, Kaepernick, right? You can't ignore the seriousness because it doesn't take place. It doesn't take place in a vacuum sports. It's fun. You love it. And You love that passion that it stirs up inside you, and those moments that are just like, then you sober down and you're like, oh yeah, but Caster didn't run the 800 this year, right? And you gotta be sober again too, because that's a person's life.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you read the piece on. The Players Tribune. Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. Seen the headlines.
Mate.
I bookmarked it. And I'll come back to it.
Mate.
Yeah, I was a bit
she talks about how she wanted to be a soldier growing up. And you don't expect that from a girl, right? Mm. Growing up, she wanted to be a soldier, AK-47, But, it's she bucks so many norms, bro.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that for free. And she is so candid. And how she speaks. I don't know who she was speaking to, but my word.
Whoever it was. They got her relaxed.
They got the meat.
That's so great. As a journalist, that's amazing, right? You're like, ooh, how did you do this, right?
I was like, what the
Journalists are very much. Alchemy. You ever seen Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee? I suppose you have, because you're a content freak, right? And that entire series, which is gone a number of seasons now, right? 10, 11 seasons.
Yeah.
Some of them on one distributor, some of them on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
The entire series about comedians geeking out over each other, right?
Yeah.
Ooh, I like how you do this, and do this, and I love how, right? And it's just, I don't know if I can use this word, but I'm going to go for it. It's a circle jerk of comedians, right? But sports journalists do the same thing. We do the same thing. And any community that is kind of like appreciative of each other and to a degree self-involved I appreciate that about I loved hearing. I saw something on YouTube several months ago, an event where Timbaland and Pharrell were two guests on a panel. And it was just like one of them going, "Oh, dude, you're amazing." And the other one going, "No, dude, you're amazing." No, and the other one going, "Oh, dude, you're amazing." And I've got to stop myself, week in and week out. I see Mutsudisi Mohono on air. I got to stop myself from texting her every week. Just going,
You're amazing.
You know, Julia Stewart, the same thing. I just want to text her a week in. Just, you're amazing. And
Kate,
when your book came out, I was just this guy, because that's what we do, right? And if I haven't said it enough, the way you structured Tando's story, the next time I saw Tando after having read your book, I'd never felt like his friend before. He's a very nice and warm guy. He greets me very warmly every time. It's amazing. And he's an amazing person. But after having read your book, the next time I saw him was at Craven Week.
Okay.
Maybe just 2 days after having finished the book. The Craven Week that was held here in Joburg at St. Sidians, right? That year that Sharks had just a team that made people part like the Red Sea.
Yeah.
And I hugged him. And it was only after having hugged him that I was why did I just hug him? We're not tight like that. And then I realized because I felt so much closer to him after having read your book.
I
was like, is that a false sense of closeness or is it legitimate? I spent the whole day trying to unpack how I now felt about time.
I think that's the biggest compliment I got on the book, because that's what I was trying to do, was make it as relatable as possible. You know how you follow content and series, I follow LeBron James so closely that I feel like I know him.
Right.
You know,
right,
I feel like if we were to walk in here, I would be like, yo,
yeah,
those new LeBrons.
Yeah, you could,
LeBrons,
yeah, you could start the conversation. Yeah,
I know exactly what he's talking about right now and stuff like that. That's what I tried to do with Tando as well.
Job done.
So whoever met him would be like, yo, man.
Job done.
Your dad, or yo, man. Your daughter, or yo, man. Great quiz. What about that? You know?
Yeah.
Thanks, bro.
Job done.
I appreciate it. Speaking of job done, right, you keep avoiding this. I'm trying to put you on a nice little pedestal here. You multiple award-winning sports journalist, by the way.
Yeah.
How is it? How did you take that all in? Scooping SABs. There was a run where it seems like they were just.
I did have a run.
It was getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I did have
you
a
had,
run.
You had to stop.
My uncle actually said to me, "Don't enter next year after I won the third."
For real.
He said, "I'm going to delegitimize the." Competition.
Yeah, maybe it was starting to look silly, bro.
That was like, fair point. But that next year was the year I resigned, and I didn't end up entering anyway. So what was your question? How did I contextualize it? Kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, man, in my head, I came into this industry not knowing what I was doing.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm decent at writing. I've got a good on-air presence, you know, and due to my history in drama, I can handle a microphone, I can handle a camera. So I was like, okay, I can do this, but I didn't have a plan, you know. It's only after maybe 12, 18, 24 months of having been in the industry formally that I kind of carved out a niche for myself and figured out what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that was in two areas in particular, but it got narrowed down to one, and that was in African sports, sports, you know, taking place all around the continent, because I felt it was underrepresented, and we don't have enough access to each other's sports, and the second was in women's sports,
right?
And I felt my accessibility to women's sports, particularly in South Africa. I had a greater level of accessibility.
Right.
You know, I could reach out to the Women's Proteas, I could reach out to Banyana. Whereas if you're trying to do something on Joshua Cheptegei, I've got to go, how am I going to get to Uganda? If I've got to do something on Kipchoge, how am I going to get to Kenya, right? It's difficult in that regard. So once I carved out a niche of women's sport for myself, I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to try to make an impact here. I'm gonna try to, because there are difficulties that existed when I came in. There are difficulties that exist now in how we distribute women's sports content, how we speak about women's sports, how we engage with the content, how we engage with the product, how we engage with the athletes.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm gonna forge a new path of representing and covering women's sports with integrity.
Yeah.
You know, again, comes back to what we said earlier, right? I just want to do things well.
Yeah.
So when I was winning things in sports journalism, my thought was, this will get me to a higher platform. This will get me to a higher plateau, right? So I accept an award and I drive home thinking that night, I'm going to use this award, this validation, I'm going to use it to step into my editor's office tomorrow morning and say, okay, I'm winning stuff for the organization. You've got to get me to the Women's World Cup so I can win more stuff on a broader scale. Or, you know,
the next challenge.
You want to grow like that.
Next level, yeah.
And so
yeah.
that's how I contextualized awards in my head.
But what was the reality?
Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
I mean, your mom will be like,
my mom cares. Fellow journalists and colleagues care. From editorial, here's the thing with editorial, and you'll know this better than anybody else. There's a concept about editorial independence, right?
Yeah.
That exists all over the world. That journalists and organizations, media of all kinds try to uphold. And obviously with good reason that I don't need to get into right now. But editorial independence without sales know-how and strategy And without the buy-in of the private sector, advertisers, sponsors, whatever the case may be, it's crippled.
Yeah.
You know, it's entirely crippled. And the thing about that sales part of the conversation is that those need to be some dynamic people, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people selling advertising, people selling, and I'm not trying to criticize anybody. It's a difficult job.
It is.
It's a really difficult job.
It's the toughest job.
And it moves
in the industry
and dips as the economy moves and dips.
Yeah.
But it almost kind of, it precedes. Right, the dip in advertising and in private sector engagement almost precedes a dip in the economy because everyone's thinking a quarter ahead.
Yeah.
Right? And a quarter after the economy has recovered, people are still hesitant. So it's a difficult thing.
And it's worse when you're dealing with digital. So digital is like this moving target, and no one's got a
moving
fixed
target. Well
sort
said.
Of idea of what
well
they're
said.
Doing. We're all kind of like
well said.
Pretty much
well
vague here, right?
But it requires risks.
Yeah, does. It does.
It requires risks, some of them. And I'm so jealous when I look at quote-unquote developed countries and the risks that they manage to take, because maybe their economies aren't growing spectacular well.
But I think
steady.
Because the economy is stable. So they can, there's a little bit of a buffer.
Yeah, and that's
before
exactly
you fall,
what it is.
Some sort of cushion.
That's exactly what it is.
You'll have some sort of credit.
100%.
You know, we are,
100%.
And I don't want to get deep into the economics of things, but in South Africa, if you fall, you fall hard.
Yeah, like, you fall hard.
The
yeah.
economy isn't there to catch you.
Yeah.
You know, so
well said.
Yeah,
well
that's
said.
Just the simplest way.
And
I could,
so
I could
you,
put it.
You here's Junior Steinbank, right? He wins another award. He does so doing really good journalistic work in women's sports, work with integrity. He goes into his editor's office. He says, "Boom, I won this again for the organization.
Cool.
I've painted the organization in an amazing light.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go forth and capitalize on this while the iron is hot."
And
if sales is not lateral thinking enough, or B, if their hands are tied,
That's it.
There's nothing more you can do. And so, you know, therefore, I'm not going to get into, you know, a whole big spiel, but
the technicalities.
Once that started setting in my mind and realizing that, you know, De La Soul said, on that most recent album that came out a few years ago, there's a line that says, "Bits and pieces never made nothing decent."
Oh.
Right? You know, you need consistency to make something decent. You need a group. Right? Bits and pieces never made nothing decent.
Yeah.
And I started to realize that as much as I liked my work, I liked my job, I liked my work, I was working towards a huge goal of trying to represent an entire group of people better and clearer and wider, but I was
like
doing it in bits and pieces.
Bits and pieces, bits and bobs.
And that was a difficult thing to
quickly
accept.
What you're doing now, tell us about ASCN, independent content, and we've had this conversation. You've written about it on your LinkedIn blog. If you're not already following Junior Steinbank on LinkedIn, please do so. You've got hella content coming up. I'll just put it to you like that. So you decided to branch independently and create your own independent sports content platform.
That's right.
Which is in its infancy, but are you excited about that?
Hugely.
Yeah.
Hugely. Just the past few weeks alone have been so amazing.
I've seen the blueprint, but I'm not gonna spoiler.
It's a difficult thing, as you know, as a new business owner and being a first time business owner, I'm figuring out a lot of things. And one of the things I'm figuring out is how much do I say, right?
Yeah.
At this point and at later points. But what needs to be known for now is that ASCN, African Sports Content Network, it needs to be realized that it's a B2B platform first and foremost. because we believe in empowering the media organizations that already exist and already operate on the African continent and around the globe to create more content, to create more consistent content and better content and more pan-African content, right? You know, and a scenario that I'd find myself in time and time again when I was a journalist was the scenario of, okay, cool. So Sundowns is hosting Raja, you know, or Sundowns is hosting somebody in the Champions League, or Pirates is hosting somebody in the Champions League, and you've got to do a preview of it, and you just don't have enough information on the opposition players. Yeah.
So you just skim the surface,
you know, and you end up, and you look for the familiar names or whatever the case may be, the guys who represent their countries, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember him from AFCON, right? And it's not a good way to do journalism, man. You know, so. Our mission is to centralize the production of African sports content in order to decentralize the ports of access, and hopefully in doing so, we'll create a more pan-African trade of sports content. Yeah. So that's what I'll say for now.
Okay, cool. I'm excited about it. I've seen it from our prior conversation. Absolutely. I've seen what you're trying to do, and I think it's amazing.
Thank you.
As a content guy myself, you know, I'm a content addict. Sportsman, there's so much going on. Like Caster's story.
Yeah.
I read, and I hate that it took the Guardian to write this. I think it was the Guardian that wrote on Desiree Ellis.
Right.
A story when Manyana were at the Women's World Cup about how she was so good as a young girl playing football
with boys. Yeah.
That when she joined the girls' team, they made her take her pants down to check if she was really a girl. Like they didn't believe that she was a girl, and her dad was like, take your pants down, show them. It's diabolical,
bonkers,
dude. That just blew my mind, you know. And I think it saddens me that has to go to the Guardian, someone who's at, I mean, they were in France. They just happened to be right place, right time.
Sure.
But how long have you known Desiree Ellis, bro? She's a Manana legend.
Desiree's player. She's been consistent throughout my career.
You could say that she's great even as a coach.
Yeah.
Because she took us to our first Women's World Cup.
Yeah.
Yet, someone from overseas managed to...
And that's the thing is that...
That's on us.
Look.
That's on us, bro.
We've got to own these stories,
We
have to own these stories.
Same thing. Players Tribune, Caster Semenya. Yeah. That's on us, mate.
Yeah. And we spoke about it when the first time I told you about my company, I told you what I was doing.
Yeah.
I remember saying, I spoke to you during the trial, right?
Yeah.
When she was at the, Court of Arbitration for Sport.
Yeah.
And I said, the fact that none of us are there. I don't think Manfred was there. Okart wasn't. Nobody. Sorry. For anybody listening to this podcast who doesn't know these people,
Sorry, these are like
sports journalists. David Isaacson wasn't there. You know, these are the people who you expect.
These guys that do everything on the daily, but the industry is just, it's not what it used to be. But anyway, before we get into a too long of a conversation, Junior, I have to thank you for coming through, man. I have to put you on the spot, though.
Okay.
Before we go, you have to give me our regular upset and playmaker of the week.
All right.
I've been adjudicating these myself for the last couple of weeks, and I think people are tired of my biased selection. So I'm going to put a neutral out there. Mm. For upset of the week, Newcastle United beating Man United 1-0. Yeah. Wolves beating Man City 2-0, the EPL champions. AmaZulu beating Cape Town City 2-1, Usutu. And Stellenbosch FC getting their first win in the ABSA Premiership by beating Polokwane City 2-0. Which of those would you say was unexpected, if at all?
I'll give it to Stellenbosch.
I'll
give it to Stellenbosch.
All right.
First of the season, I'll give it to Stellenbosch.
Yeah.
The United Newcastle was not a shock. Disappointing if you're a supporter, but not a shock. Even
Wolves City.
Wolves over City is not Dude, that guy should have been manager of the season last season.
Espirito Santo, I think.
Should have been manager of the season.
That whole team doesn't
care, incredible.
He is incredible.
All right, so if
he's got a Portuguese bias, so it's like the Portuguese national team in that team, but...
Do they win? Any quote unquote outside top six, I remember the commentator saying yesterday, what is the top six? He was having an existential crisis. He's like, what is the top six? Where are we going?
What is that?
As a league, he was so.
As a people.
He was freaking out.
As a people.
So if any outside top six team is going to beat City 2-0, it's likely to be Wolves.
It's highly likely. Mm. All right. Playmaker. Mm. I would have gone Cheslin Kolbe, let me just put it to you that way. Okay. But he's a nominee for you for his performance against Italy, scoring two tries, obviously. Rohit Sharma getting two centuries, one in each innings in India's first test win against South Africa.
So much context behind Rohit.
Which they won by 203 runs. Yeah. And Tamsanga, the king, Kabuza. For his man of the match performance.
Context.
In the MTN 8 final for SuperSport United against Highlands Park. Funny thing about Sad thing about Kabuza is that he had lost his son in the week leading up to this game, but he kept it hidden to the team because he didn't want the team to be distracted. Can you believe it, bro?
What?
Can you believe it? He didn't want to distract the team. He had lost his son in the week. He only revealed after the game. The coach, Caetano Tembo, actually released it in a press conference.
Post-match?
Yeah, post-match press conference, yeah.
Tembo himself is someone who deserves a lot of props. But anyways, that's the conversation for another day. That's amazing. Kabuza comes with history over the last couple of years. He's had difficulties, man. He's had difficulties.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember even opposition managers. I remember Khombela going like at a press conference that had nothing to do with Pirates. Just going, oh, guys, he's a good kid. He's a good kid. Let him just find his way. Rohit as well, a lot of context behind there as well. You know, unable to solidify his place at the top of, at test level. But he's at home.
Mm. Yeah, he is a home track bully. Though.
Yeah, as much bully. As I really respect what he did last week, I'm gonna say Kabuza, but I'll also make a special mention of Lizelle Lee's innings against India in the last.
But the series was gone though.
The series was gone, but boy, she hit that ball around.
Was it her and Sunay Luce?
And Sunay Luce at the top
opening
of the,
partnership. Yeah. How many runs did they make? Like 117.
I think it was a record breaking.
Yeah, it was a record partnership.
South African partnership.
But for me, the series was gone.
How do you wait until a match that shouldn't even have taken place?
Exactly.
Because they created that match because the first two were rained out.
Were rained out. Yeah.
No,
but they did play well.
Kabuza gets it from me.
That's it, mate. Thanks for joining me on the Sports Live podcast. I really appreciate it, brother.
This has been great, man. Thanks. Please have me back sometime.
I will sometime soon.
No way.
Cheers, bud.
Cheers.
That's it from me, Sibu Mtshikeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcast. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the multimedia live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the TESO Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Ninawa Mchana Ntoko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the Sports Live podcast, it's goodbye for now.